For over 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., so don't forget to set your dials and tune in every week. My co-host Dana Lake will be back next week. You can also listen to us online a couple different ways. Number one, if you know somebody that's out of state but wants to listen to the show as it airs on Sunday, they can stream it from their computer by going to www.federalnewsradio.com. In addition, if you want to listen to any of our previously recorded shows, we have a phenomenal archive of shows on the Village Green website. They're our show sponsor. Their website is www.myvillagegreen.com. And on the right-hand side of the homepage, there's a little microphone icon. If you click on it, it will take you to that archive show section. Wonderful resource of information. We've got a lot to talk about today. It's a popular topic. It's one that probably people are somewhat aware of, but I think it's really great to dive into the issue a little bit deeper. We're going to be talking about vitamin D, and we've got a phenomenal special guest on the show with us that I'm going to introduce in just a second, who's going to help us understand a little bit of the history and science behind vitamin D, how it works in the body, some health conditions it's associated with, and why it's so important to think about vitamin D as part of our overall health and wellness. And I say it's one that most people are familiar with because, you know, being a doctor and seeing patients every day and reading over intake forms and asking people what they're taking on a regular basis, I would say probably one of the most popular nutrients or supplements that people have in their medicine cabinet is a vitamin D supplement. The research behind vitamin D and its highlighting that research in the media has led to a huge boom in vitamin D supplementation over the last, I would say, probably 10 years. And it's one that people really feel is safe. They feel it's probably doing something great for their health, and they're taking it because they've heard all of these great statistics or they've heard a media report on the wonders of vitamin D. But this show is going to take us a little bit deeper than just those superficial reports and hopefully help you to understand and really dive into the issue of vitamin D, what it is, where it comes from, and how our body utilizes it, and why it's an important nutrient to really consider making sure. I'm not even going to say consider supplementing with. What I'm going to say is making sure that your body has enough of it. And we're going to learn about different ways that vitamin D, we can get good vitamin D levels in the blood besides supplementation. So we're going to introduce my special guest, Dr. Steve Christensen. He's an MD, received his medical degree from the University of Utah School of Medicine and completed his family medicine residency at McKay D Hospital Center in Ogden, Utah. A board certified family physician, he practiced the full gamut of rural medicine, much of it as a solo practitioner in Utah, Idaho, Wyoming, Oregon, and Montana. In the late 1990s, as clinic director for the Confederated Tribes of Tsleil-Waututh Indians in Tsleil-Waututh, Oregon, he guided the organization to accreditation with the Accreditation Association for Ambulatory Healthcare. After leaving medical practice in 2003, Steve and his wife, Tanya, owned and operated a nutrition and health food store in Newport, Oregon, before returning to the inland Northwest. Steve is an avid writer, having composed hundreds of health and nutrition-related articles for Livestrong.com and other online forums. Dr. Christensen, thank you for bringing your expertise and time to the show with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, hey, thank you, Kevin. It's my pleasure to be here.
Sure. You know, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I could launch right into this, or we could converse about the weather some more. I was having fun before we get on.
No, let's talk about vitamin D. The weather does relate because it is winter time, and we'll talk about maybe, you know, how that affects vitamin D. But let's start off with a little bit of an oral history of vitamin D, maybe how we discovered it, where it comes from. Let's just do a little bit of groundwork here so people can really get a context and for the further discussion we're going to have today.
Sounds good. As you mentioned, over the past decade or so, few nutrients have garnered as much attention from both the scientific community and consumers as vitamin D. Due to some recent revelations about its actions and potential health benefits, the so-called sunshine vitamin is being subjected to some really intense scientific scrutiny. given what we now know, it's pretty clear that our traditional view of vitamin D and what it does in the human body, which is a view that still persists in some circles, is far too simplistic. But before we launch into all of the exciting things we're learning about vitamin D, I thought it might be fun to talk about how vitamin D was first discovered, how our bodies acquire this important nutrient, and how it performs its functions within our cells, tissues, and organs. And as you know, Kevin, the concept of vitamins is actually pretty new in the vast scheme of things. It was only about a century ago that scientists were first struck by the notion that foods might contain microscopic nutrients that are essential for life. Physicians who treated patients with scurvy, beriberi, and rickets, all of these were diseases that had been recognized centuries earlier, they already knew that certain foods could reverse or prevent these conditions. But the connection between specific factors in these foods and the diseases that developed when they weren't included in the diet was a long time coming. It was around 1912, I think, when a Polish biochemist named Casimir Funk first proposed the idea that foods contained vital amines that were necessary for survival and optimal health. Later on, when some of these essential food-based factors were isolated and identified, the name vital amine was shortened to vitamin, and the term just sort of stuck, even though many vitamins aren't really amines. And for the non-chemists, an amine is simply a compound that's derived from ammonia, which is a nitrogen atom that's attached to three hydrogen atoms. And if you replace one or more of those hydrogen atoms with atoms that contain carbon, you have an amine. And since the natural world is chock full of amines, Casimir Funk's idea that these compounds were present in foods wasn't really too far-fetched. Like many things that happen in the scientific world, the discovery of vitamin D occurred more by serendipity than by design.
Mm-hmm.
During the first two decades of the 20th century, researchers had already identified vitamin A, which cured or prevented an eye condition. It was called xerophthalmia. They'd found vitamin B1 or thiamine, which cured beriberi. And they'd identified vitamin C, which, as we all know, cures or prevents scurvy. Well, in 1919, Sir Edward Mellenby, a British physician who was troubled by the high incidence of rickets in his country and who'd followed the work of the scientists who'd identified vitamins A, B, and C, decided to find out if rickets, too, was a nutritional disease. For listeners who aren't familiar with rickets, this is a condition that's caused by inadequate calcium and phosphorus absorption, and it's characterized by poor growth, skeletal deformities, easily fractured bones, muscle pain, and a host of other problems. Well, anyway, Dr. Mellenby designed this experiment where he fed a group of dogs nothing but oatmeal, which was the main diet consumed by people in Scotland, where rickets was particularly common. Well, sure enough, after several months on the oatmeal-only diet, Mellenby's dogs all developed rickets. Now, this is where the first of several serendipitous events intervened. Mellenby conducted his entire study indoors, where his dogs were kept out of the sun. If they'd been allowed access to sunshine, Mellenby's experiment probably would have failed, and we might still be looking for a cure for rickets. And this is an important point I want to come back to later on. The next step in Sir Mellenby's study, then, was to see if he could reverse the effects of the oatmeal-only diet, that is, cure the rickets he'd caused, by adding something to the dog's diet that would alleviate the symptoms of a nutritional disease. Well, here again, good fortune played a role. Mellenby chose cod liver oil, which was what other scientists had used to cure xerophthalmia and from which vitamin A was eventually isolated. Well, when his dog's rickets resolved following the addition of cod liver oil to their diet, Sir Mellenby justifiably but incorrectly assumed that rickets, like xerophthalmia, was caused by a vitamin A deficiency. Well, coincidentally, and in yet another serendipitous stroke of fortune, a guy by the name of Elmer McCollum, the American scientist who'd used cod liver oil to cure xerophthalmia, and who subsequently discovered vitamin A, he'd been following Mellenby's work. Well, McCollum began to wonder why, if vitamin A deficiency caused both rickets and xerophthalmia, he hadn't seen any rickets in the people or animals he treated for xerophthalmia. So he repeated Sir Mellenby's experiment, but with one slight difference. He used cod liver oil that had had its vitamin A removed by warming it and bubbling oxygen through it. Well, lo and behold, McCollum discovered he could still cure rickets with this vitamin A-free cod liver oil, but he could no longer cure the xerophthalmia. So this led him to conclude that there was another vitamin in cod liver oil, which he, of course, called vitamin D, because we already had A, B, and C.
Mm.
Well, like all interesting stories, this one still has a few twists. I mentioned earlier that Mellenby's experiment, his dog and oatmeal experiment, would have failed if he'd kept his animals outdoors where they would have been exposed to sunlight. Well, while Mellenby and McCollum were conducting their independent work on opposite sides of the Atlantic, scientists in other countries had observed that rickets could be prevented or cured in both humans and animals by exposing them to sunlight. And what's more, one researcher discovered that rickets could be prevented in rats by simply exposing their food to ultraviolet light. Well, you can imagine, you know, the confusion this must have caused for these early researchers. You know, on the one hand, rickets could be cured or prevented by furnishing cod liver oil, which contained this as yet uncharacterized nutrient called vitamin D. On the other hand, rickets could also be prevented or cured by exposure to ultraviolet light, even when cod liver oil was not included in the diet. Well, this implied that in addition to dietary vitamin D being a cure for rickets, there was either another mechanism by which UV light prevented rickets without involving vitamin D, or that UV light somehow created vitamin D when it interacted with yet another unknown substance in the skin of animals or in certain types of food. Well, as it turned out, the latter proved to be true. For many years, following the discovery that cod liver oil and ultraviolet light could cure rickets, both of these modalities were used to prevent or treat this disabling disease, and scientists generally acknowledged the idea of a compound called vitamin D. But the molecular structure of vitamin D wasn't fully characterized until 1932. And interestingly enough, the first vitamin D to be isolated didn't come from cod liver oil or another animal source. It came from plants. A group of scientists who were experimenting with a plant sterol called ergosterol discovered it could be converted to ergocalciferol by irradiating it with ultraviolet light, and it too had some anti-rickets properties. Well, as we all know, ergocalciferol is now called vitamin D2, and this is the form of vitamin D used in most supplements that are vegetarian-friendly. It's even found in some prescription forms of vitamin D. Vitamin D3, or cholecalciferol, was isolated and characterized 5 years after D2, I think 1937. But oddly enough, it wasn't until 1978 that scientists finally proved that vitamin D3, like D2, could be formed when ultraviolet light struck an ergosterol-like molecule called 7-dehydrocholesterol within the skin of sun-exposed animals.
That's a really great history and sort of starts off the process of understanding that sort of leading to this even more revelations about vitamin D that we've seen in the last 2 years. And I think we should take a short break and come back and launch into that discussion, because what I think that we're going to end up talking about, Dr. Christensen, is that, you know, vitamin D being called a vitamin is actually not exactly how it's characterized, because unlike other vitamins, our body actually makes it. And its role in human health and function seems to surpass the role of all other known vitamins. And that's what I would love for you to touch on in the next segment. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back right after these words.
Mega Food Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCT PTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet. Committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body, and this is where Gero Formula's Neuro Optimizer comes to the rescue. Neuro Optimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. Neuro Optimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. Neuro Optimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Are you under a lot of stress at work? Pressure from the boss, budget cuts, impossible workloads? It can all take a serious toll on your health. But we can help. Village Green Apothecary has everything you need for a healthier lifestyle. A wide range of nutritional supplements, health-related books, and more. We've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living resources for over 45 years, and we'll take the time to advise you about your unique needs. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. Thank you all for tuning in. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. My wonderful co-host, Dana Lake, will be back next week. We're here talking with Steve Christensen. He's a medical doctor and medical affairs consultant for Thorne Research, and we are discussing vitamin D. In the last segment, he just gave us a wonderful overview of the discovery of vitamin D, and in this segment, we're going to be talking a little bit more about that next step, this idea that when we discovered in, 1978, that vitamin D could actually be synthesized in the skin, and then we're going to, of course, move on to the health benefits and roles in optimal health and physiology that vitamin D plays. So, Steve, thank you for that great summary. Why don't you sort of start off this segment by discussing with us a little bit more about what we started learning about vitamin D from, 1980s on.
Thank you. Yeah, well, as you mentioned, we just navigated that convoluted path that led to the discovery of vitamin D and its identification as a vital nutrient in human health. Once this role was established, rickets, which we talked about earlier, a disease caused by vitamin D deficiency, essentially disappeared in all but the poorest countries. And strangely, though, after all this came to be, scientific interest in vitamin D dwindled because researchers were concentrating on other vitamins. But they did spend some time. As a matter of fact, the majority of the work on vitamin D revolved around clarifying its synthetic pathways, which were still unclear. And unfortunately, this planted the seed for what is now an explosion in scientific interest, although it took most of the 20th century for this particular seed to blossom. One reason that this search for the details surrounding vitamin D synthesis and metabolism was so important is that it revealed some critical differences between vitamin D and other vitamins, which Dr. Passero alluded to earlier. It led some nutritionists to question whether vitamin D should even be called a vitamin, which is a debate that's still swirling. By definition, a vitamin is an organic compound that's essential for normal growth and nutrition and is required in small quantities in the diet because it cannot be synthesized by the body. Well, obviously, this definition doesn't apply to vitamin D because this nutrient can be manufactured within the body. And this is a good place to discuss that whole process because it does have a bearing on our understanding of vitamin D's role in our health. So as you recall, we talked about earlier that vitamin D3, cholecalciferol, is formed in the skin of animals when sunshine, specifically light in the ultraviolet B spectrum, strikes this compound called 7-dehydrocholesterol. This is a four-ringed molecule with a short side chain, and when UV light hits 7-dehydrocholesterol, one of those four rings is broken. And because this destabilizes the molecule, the whole structure twists around the open ring until it settles into a stabilized position. And this stabilized molecule is called vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol. By the way, cholecalciferol is also the form of vitamin D you get from eating certain animal-based foods, and it's the most common form of vitamin D found in supplements. Now, vitamin D3 doesn't possess any significant physiological activity in its own right, so it has to undergo a couple of minor structural changes before it can exert any meaningful effects in our tissues. The first of these changes occurs in the liver, where an enzyme attaches a hydroxyl group, which is just an oxygen and a hydrogen atom, to the D3, and this converts it to a compound called 25-hydroxy-D or calcidiol. Well, calcidiol does have some physiologic activity, but it's not the most active form of vitamin D. In order to become fully activated, calcidiol must have one more hydroxyl group added, and this is something that happens in the human kidney. And the addition of the second hydroxyl group to calcidiol produces a more complicated compound called 1,25-dihydroxy-D, or calcitriol. And this is the most active form of vitamin D. So let's retrace those steps very quickly. UV light strikes 7-dehydrocholesterol in the skin, creating vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol. Cholecalciferol enters the bloodstream from the skin if it's created by UV light, or from the gut if it comes from a food or supplement. It makes its way to the liver, where it's converted to 25-hydroxy-D or calcidiol. Calcidiol then travels to the kidneys, where it's converted to 1,25-dihydroxy-D or calcitriol. And this is the most active form of vitamin D. Now, if you're like me, you're probably wondering why nature would use such a roundabout process for manufacturing a nutrient that's ultimately so important to our health. Well, the truth is, this is only one pathway, albeit an important one for synthesizing active vitamin D. Like many of our outdated notions about vitamin D, scientists believe that this was the only important internal pathway for synthesizing vitamin D until the latter part of the 20th century. We now know that many cells, including skin cells and immune cells, possess all of the necessary metabolic machinery for converting cholecalciferol all the way to calcitriol. So these cells can apparently activate vitamin D without waiting for it to travel from the gut or the skin to the liver, to the kidneys, and back to the tissues again. And this finding, coupled with the discovery of molecular receptors in non-bone tissues that are specifically targeted by vitamin D, has led researchers to believe that vitamin D has activities that reach far beyond bone metabolism. Mm-hmm. The interaction between vitamin D and its receptor, which is simply called VDR for vitamin D receptor, is more typical of a hormone than a vitamin. So this brings up one of those other differences between vitamin D and other vitamins. And, you know, the vitamins that we classically consider vitamins, such as B and C and all that, they primarily act in cooperation with enzymes or enzyme complexes that perform their work within a metabolic pathway. Hormones, on the other hand, typically target receptors that switch on or upregulate those metabolic pathways, or that alter the activity of genes that produce specific products within the cell. So hormones are more like messenger or signaling molecules, and that's vitamin D, while classic vitamins are more like tools used by enzymes to facilitate metabolic pathways. You know, I'd like to linger on this discussion of vitamin D receptors for just a moment. Since it was first discovered in the intestines of chicks about 40 years ago, VDR has become one of the hottest topics in the scientific community. It's been identified in more than 35 non-bone target tissues in humans, including pancreatic islet cells, which make insulin, endothelial cells, which line the interior of our blood vessels, skeletal and cardiac muscle, nervous tissue, hematopoietic cells. These are the bone marrow cells that give rise to other blood cells. It's been found in placenta and in immune cells, such as T lymphocytes and monocytes. We've all been talking about the human genome of late. Human genetic mapping studies have revealed that nearly 22,000 VDR binding sites across the human genome. There are roughly 100 to 500 target genes for activated vitamin D in every tissue. And according to some estimates, vitamin D receptors directly or indirectly regulate up to 5% of the total human genome, and that's about 1,250 genes in their products. So we've come a long way from the narrow perspective that vitamin D was only important for maintaining skeletal integrity and preserving calcium and phosphorus homeostasis. In fact, although we still don't understand the actions of vitamin D in many of these tissues, nor do we know why VDR is present in tissues or cells that don't seem to use vitamin D, it's a safe bet to say there probably aren't many processes in the human body that are not somehow influenced by vitamin D.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be that way when we start exploring the research, and I think it's a great explanation, and it starts to broaden the understanding of how one nutrient can be tied to so many different health benefits, whether you're somebody in the general public who's just getting a smattering of media reports, or you're somebody like yourself, Dr. Christensen, and myself, who are always looking at the new research coming out and different ways to address different conditions and support health and human physiology. It's really impressive when you see such a variety of conditions, everything from cardiac conditions to cancer risk to bone health to immune function to cognitive function. I mean, it's almost like every diabetes, almost every system in the body and health condition that we have seems to be positively or somewhat affected by vitamin D. And when you start understanding it from the standpoint of it being more like a hormone and having this broad-reaching influence on every cell and this broad-reaching influence on our genetic expression, it finally starts to make sense why it becomes so useful and so powerful as a way to support human health and physiology above and beyond what you find from any other vitamin that is classically out there. So, you know, I think that was a phenomenal explanation to help people understand really the importance of vitamin D and sort of what we're learning about it, and understanding that what we're learning about it is still fairly new. This area of research that we are starting to uncover regarding vitamin D receptors, we're sort of at the place where, you know, that first doctor was who was bubbling the vitamin A out of cod liver oil and figuring out that it was the D that caused rickets. I mean, we still have a long way to go before we really understand the true implications of what vitamin D does in our system. And I think that will continue to evolve over time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, our understanding of vitamin D and its actions is in its infancy. It's important to remember, I think, that distinction that you mentioned, that vitamin D is more like a hormone than a vitamin. It doesn't have to be obtained through the diet. It can be manufactured in our body. And there are specific areas where there's been some research done that I think highlights some of the important actions of vitamin D in our body. And I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about some of those specific roles. Much of the discussion that follows will revolve around some fairly recent studies that suggest, perhaps, rather than confirm all of these roles, but it's pretty exciting information. And as you just said, we're on the threshold of some really big breakthroughs, I think, in regards to vitamin D.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead. This would be a good time to discuss it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say, well, we should probably start with the classic role that everybody associates with vitamin D. And once again, that's of maintaining bone health and preserving calcium and phosphorus homeostasis. You know, according to the folks who study these things, vitamin D was being produced by phytoplankton living in the primordial oceans at least a half a billion years ago. And at first, vitamin D was simply a part of a mechanism for protecting certain ultraviolet-sensitive molecules, DNA being among them, whenever these microorganisms rose to the surface of the sea to seek out sunlight for photosynthesis. Later, when multicellular animals moved out of the calcium-rich oceans and onto land, the issue of calcium balance became a little bit more important, so there needed to be a mechanism to maintain calcium levels within the bloodstream, the primitive circulation of these animals. Well, vitamin D had already established itself as a signaling molecule that was instrumental in repairing sun-damaged DNA, so it seemed the natural choice for controlling the mechanisms that allowed animals to absorb calcium and phosphorus and retain these minerals. Later still, as animals with bony skeletons appeared, vitamin D's ability to regulate intestinal calcium absorption made it essential for growing and maintaining a calcified skeleton. Well, now we know that by interacting with intestinal vitamin D receptors, vitamin D increases intestinal calcium absorption by 400%. It enhances phosphorus absorption by at least 20%. You know, and if your serum calcium level begins to fall, vitamin D, in cooperation with parathyroid hormone, triggers all these different mechanisms that reestablish normal calcium levels within the serum. So increased absorption from the gut, increased reabsorption of calcium from the kidneys, from the urine, immobilizes calcium from the bone, and then there's just this fine-tuned balance that vitamin D plays a part in to keep our skeletons healthy and keep our blood and tissue calcium levels within a very, very narrow range. The next thing I'd like to talk about is cardiovascular disease. This is the number one killer of American adults. The identification of vitamin D receptors in endothelium, which you recall is those are the cells that line our vessels, in the muscles that surround our blood vessels, within the heart muscle, and all these other cardiovascular tissues, this strongly suggests a role for vitamin D in cardiovascular health, even though the specifics of that role are not clearly identified. But a recent large prospective epidemiologic study called the Intermountain Heart Collaborative Study involved about 40,000 people, demonstrated a significant relationship between low serum vitamin D levels and an increased incidence of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, peripheral vascular disease, coronary artery disease, heart attack, and stroke. A number of potential mechanisms have been proposed for vitamin D's benefits in heart health, and they're still working these out, but they include reduction of vessel wall thickening, inhibition of formation of those cholesterol plaques along the walls of our arteries, and regulation of inflammation, which plays a huge part in propagating those atherogenic plaques that lead to cardiovascular disease. So here again, vitamin D is acting like a signaling molecule in all these various mechanisms. Well, next on the list, diabetes and metabolic syndrome. Again, huge issues in this country and increasing in importance. Well, it appears that vitamin D plays a role in making our bodies more efficient at utilizing fuel molecules and in preventing the progression of insulin resistance, elevated blood glucose, and systemic inflammation, all of which are characteristics of type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome. In addition, vitamin D appears to provide protection against type 1 diabetes, which we now know is an autoimmune disease. One study involving about 10,000 people confirmed this association between low serum vitamin D levels and a heightened risk for type 2 diabetes. And a number of studies have linked low vitamin D levels with metabolic syndrome. As for type 1 diabetes, a Finnish study that was completed not long ago took a look at 12,000 children who were being given vitamin D to prevent rickets. The kids, it was kind of a double-blind study where half the kids got 2,000 international units of vitamin D daily, while the others got either lower doses or none. And some of this was done, you know, they gleaned these kids from the population. But it demonstrated a 90% lower risk over 30 years of those kids' lives for type 1 diabetes in the infants who received that 2,000-unit dose. Mm. So the little kids that got higher doses, or I should say adequate doses, had a lower risk for type 1 diabetes. So vitamin D is playing a role in this autoimmune disease that we call type 1 diabetes.
Sure, I mean, I think we've seen some research pointing to vitamin D's role in other autoimmune diseases as well, so it certainly makes sense. We're going to have to take a break, Dr. Christensen. When we come back, I'd like to discuss other health conditions that's associated with vitamin D, and then I'd like to get down to sort of the brass tacks of dealing with vitamin D regarding, you know, supplementation, blood levels, testing, you know, how should we get it, how much should we get. I think this is where the issue becomes a little more gray, and I think a place where people could really use some good guidance and good information to make knowledgeable decisions about what they should be doing. So this is Dr. Kevin Pacero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be back right after these words.
Solgar No. 7 can help you feel the difference. Solgar No. 7 actually shows improvement in joint comfort within 7 days. Now you can start to get back on track fast and pursue the activities you love. Solgar No. 7 is a breakthrough in joint care with no glucosamine and no chondroitin. The advanced bioactives in Solgar No. 7 help to increase flexibility, mobility, and range of motion within 7 days. One capsule once a day is all you need. When stiff joints occasionally say no, Solgar No. 7 says yes. Solgar No. 7. Available at Village Green Apothecary.
New from Garden of Life, Kind Organics Whole Food Multivitamins. They are the only USDA-certified, organic, non-GMO-verified whole food multivitamins available. They're gluten-free, certified vegan, and feature a patent-pending clean tablet technology. Kind Organics is super clean, untreated, unadulterated, and real whole food. Kind Organics Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Be kind to your body and the earth. Kind Organics, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team includes pharmacists, nutritionists, clinical herbalists, and naturopaths offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. Thank you all for tuning in. My wonderful co-host Dana Lake will be returning next week. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. Today we are talking with Dr. Steve Christensen, and we are discussing the important role of vitamin D. I know many of you out there listening probably take your vitamin D. You have a cabinet with vitamin D supplements in it. You've probably heard about it. The point of this show is to dig a little deeper into the understanding of vitamin D and to really give you some good education about why this is an important nutrient to take and what role it is having in your body. And then what we're going to get to in these next couple segments, the second half of the show, which you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for, is the nuts and bolts of dealing with vitamin D supplementation, what your blood levels should be, how to maintain good blood levels. Should you get it through sun? Should you get it through food? Should you get it through supplements? What is the safe upper limit? These are, I think, very, very important questions. But before we get into that, Dr. Christensen was discussing in the last segment some important health conditions associated with vitamin D. We certainly talked about the issue of heart disease. We talked about the issue of diabetes. We've talked about its role in skeletal and bone health. In this segment, Dr. Christensen, we've got a couple other really important conditions that we don't want to skip over: neurodegenerative diseases, we've got cancer, we've got immune health. Maybe you can touch on those three areas because they're places where vitamin D research is very strong.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just before the break, you alluded to the other immune effects of vitamin D. We sort of brushed over type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune disease. Now, perhaps nowhere in the body are the effects of vitamin D more compelling and intriguing than within the immune system. Now, as we talked about, most immune cells possess the machinery to convert cholecalciferol to the activated form of vitamin D, which is calcitriol. And research shows that most immune cells possess VDRs, or vitamin D receptors. Moreover, the 1,25-dihydroxy-2, the vitamin D, which is calcitriol, has been shown to be a potent regulator of immune activity. a number, multiple observational, epidemiologic, and interventional studies demonstrate this inverse relationship between vitamin D status and all kinds of immune-related conditions. Infections, for example, most notably those involving the respiratory tract.
Mm-hmm.
If your vitamin D levels are low, you're more at risk for respiratory infections. Many, many studies have also demonstrated that people who live at higher latitudes where sun exposure is less and therefore serum vitamin D levels are lower are more prone to autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. I mean, you just name it.
Yeah.
And vitamin D has been tied to those.
Yeah, and the issue is so interesting, Dr. Christensen. I mean, we talk about vitamin D and its role in the immune system. The thing that we all think about with our immune system is, how do I strengthen it? How do I make it stronger? How do I make it more aggressive? I mean, it's a very American kind of mentality to thinking our immune system. We want it bigger. We want it stronger. We want it faster. We want immune cells that can kill things. But what people don't understand is that a lot of the major complications that arise from illnesses, especially things like the flu and very serious illnesses, arise because the immune system becomes completely overactive and can't basically shut itself down in the face of a virus or an infection. And what we learn, one of the really interesting things about vitamin D is that not only does it help our immune system work more efficiently when it has to eradicate a virus or a bacteria, but it also has this important role in suppressing the immune system and actually regulating it and preventing it from becoming too overactive. And there's really interesting research around that. There was a new virus that was recently discovered, and they are thinking that people who are infected with a certain virus may have a higher rate of recovery from Ebola and these other illnesses, because basically some of those reactions, and the reason people die from Ebola, is the immune system basically goes into such overdrive, you can't shut it down. And a little bit of immune suppression can be a way of improving your recovery. And of course, we don't want to make ourselves sick and suppress our immune system, but something that naturally regulates it, like vitamin D, you can see how it starts to play a role in that. It's a really fascinating concept that I don't think many people are aware of.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I guess the simplest way to look at it is that vitamin D makes your immune system smarter.
Right.
And your point about regulating or down-regulating an overactive immune system is a critical one. Autoimmune diseases, as you said, are caused by an overactive immune system. And vitamin D, we know, helps to prevent and may even, you know, in some cases, ameliorate the symptoms of autoimmune diseases that are already present. So on the one hand, you've got this nutrient that will boost your immune response when you're exposed to, say, a respiratory virus. On the other hand, through different signaling mechanisms, it will help to turn off those parts of the immune system that are overactive.
Right.
It's just amazing the number of things that vitamin D does within the human body through all of these different mechanisms. And again, we're talking about those better than 1,200 genes that vitamin D touches. And another area that is becoming an issue in America is as our population ages, we're seeing neurodegenerative diseases on the rise, Alzheimer's disease and Parkinsonism, for example. They're becoming more prevalent. Well, a number of studies have shown that among seniors, low serum vitamin D levels are associated with cognitive decline. Well, you know, these folks are already dealing many times with other chronic diseases, and when you're not thinking clearly, obviously those other diseases are going to become more problematic. You know, back in 2010, somebody did a review of about 40 studies that have been conducted since the mid-60s all the way through 2009. They showed that vitamin D insufficiency was very common in Americans over age 65.
Mm-hmm.
And those people that had lower vitamin D levels were far more likely to suffer from cognitive deficits
mm-hmm.
than their peers whose, the vitamin D levels were normal or higher.
Yeah,
and you know, similar numerous studies have pointed out an association between vitamin D deficiency and the incidence of Parkinsonism, which is slightly different from. Alzheimer's is more a loss of cognitive ability due to loss of acetylcholine, while Parkinson's is a kind of a. While there's cognitive decline associated with it, it's more of a movement disorder that's associated with loss of dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin D plays a role in both of those specific diseases as well as in neurologic health overall.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on about different conditions. You know, I don't want to miss the opportunity to share with the audience some of the kind of facts about vitamin D and what we should do about it. I mean, we found that a lot of different health conditions are related to vitamin D deficiencies, or we found that the resistance to certain types of health conditions are greater when you have adequate or higher levels of vitamin D when we look at large population studies. You know, I think what we need to sort of start to parse out here is what exactly do we do with this information, Dr. Christensen? I mean, you know, what do people do with it? I mean, yes, most people are taking a vitamin D supplement, but, you know, I think you know where I'm going with this. Is that just enough to just go out and buy a vitamin D supplement and take it? I mean, the story doesn't stop there. And what I want to spend some time with is helping people to understand, you know, what you should be doing to make sure that you're using vitamin D in an adequate way. So maybe we can set up the next part with that question. I'm going to let you go ahead and start on that road.
Yeah, excellent questions all. I guess what it boils down to is how do you know when you're getting enough vitamin D and how should you get it? And this is a tough question because many of vitamin D's effects are subtle. So you might not know that you're deficient until you fall ill, and even then you might not be able to pinpoint vitamin D deficiency as the cause unless you're looking. Because people absorb dietary vitamin D differently, and because the amount of vitamin D generated by sun exposure varies dramatically, depending on your skin color, the amount of clothing you wear, the latitude where you live, and the time of year, it's pretty difficult to recommend a dose of vitamin D that works for everybody. So most experts suggest checking your serum vitamin D levels. And then the 25-hydroxy-D level is what is typically used to determine your vitamin D status. And it also can be used to follow your response to supplementation.
And why is that one the important one to choose, Dr. Christensen? Because there's several different types of vitamin D tests that can be run via blood. So, you know, why should people make sure that that's the one their doctor's checking?
Well, several reasons. Number one is it's widely performed, so most labs do it. And the other is that some of the other more activated forms of vitamin D, like calcitriol, shorter half-lives, they don't stick around the serum. That's the form that gets stuck to the vitamin D receptors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the serum 25-hydroxy-D is probably just the most accurate and normalizable, if you want to use that term.
Okay.
And again, it's just generally used because it's available. Yeah, but it's strange. Even though, you know, we've all learned that the 25-hydroxy-D is probably the most useful marker of vitamin D status, certain advisory committees, you know, the National Academy of Sciences, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, they recently recommended against having your serum level checked, your vitamin D level checked. And they claim that monitoring this level doesn't impact your long-term health in any meaningful way. And as everything that we've discussed up to this point shows that that's an incorrect assumption. And it should be noted, you know, I have to say that these same advisory committees have accepted a cutoff level for vitamin D deficiency at 20 nanograms per mil. You know, and that doesn't probably mean much to a lot of your listeners, but, you know, there's a normal range. And for whatever it's worth, the lower level of vitamin D sufficiency is hotly debated at
yes.
this stage of the game. You know, and this recommendation for a lower threshold at 20 nanograms per mil is a recommendation that's based, at least in part, on the outdated notion that vitamin D sufficiency is equivalent to the absence of rickets.
Right.
So a lot of these guys have basically set this threshold based upon the outdated, archaic notion that vitamin D mainly takes care of bone health and calcium and phosphorus levels. And as we've learned, that's just not true. So if you accept their level as being a good gauge of vitamin D sufficiency, a lot of people would be considered normal, but research has proven time and time again that preventing rickets is about the lowest bar you can choose as an indicator of vitamin D status. In 2014, just last year, there was this huge meta-analysis of dozens of studies. Once again, these studies were completed between the 60s and 2013. They revealed a drop in all-cause mortality associated with levels vitamin D levels exceeding 30 nanograms per mil. You did not see that drop in all-cause mortality, and by definition, that's just the death rate from all diseases combined.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see that drop in mortality until you hit 30 nanograms per mil. So that's probably the lowest level that we should accept as vitamin D sufficiency. And there are several prominent vitamin D researchers out there that contend that a level of at least 50 nanograms per mil is optimum.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to bring up is, you know, where should we be? And I think that, you know, I mean, even the Institute of Medicine put out updated recommendations on vitamin D supplementation. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago, you know, where they recommended a safe upper limit of about 4,000 IUs. And people in the vitamin D community who are looking at this research and seeing its relationship to all of these different conditions and immune function and even related to cancer were a little upset that they didn't come out higher, but their standards were really based on preventing rickets and bone problems and really weren't looking at the other potential benefits of vitamin D. And I think the reason for the justification is that the rigors that they have to stick to when it comes to evaluating the research, basically, there hasn't been enough time where they've been able to look at these types of experiments over long periods of time to recommend it. So the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to wait for all of that research to come out to tell you something we probably already know, or do you want to read the writing on the wall? And we've seen this over and over again when there was no recommendation against eating trans fats. There was no evidence that they were problematic, you know, that they were totally safe for human consumption. Well, it took 20 years of watching people suffer in order to be able to finally make a recommendation that trans fat should be banned. I think the question that we have to ask ourselves, Dr. Christensen, either as providers and as patients and people in the population who are looking with vitamin D supplementation, we're reading the writing on the wall. We're seeing this research showing that when we monitor blood levels and find people with higher blood levels, we're seeing lower incidences of a wide range of diseases. So what's the harm in taking vitamin D? I guess you've got to look at the cost benefit ratio. If there was a, you know, reduction in all cause mortality from, you know, drinking, I don't know, dishwasher fluid, you may not want to think about doing that because the risk is high. So what is the risk associated with vitamin D supplementation? Is there a significant risk, and can people safely take it if they're being responsible?
Well, yeah, that's the key word, is responsible. You know, there is a risk. You know, vitamin D toxicity does occur. And as a matter of fact, some of the recommendations for daily doses, you know, the recommended dietary allowances, a lot of that goes back to some paranoia that developed in the mid-20th century when industrial-grade overdoses of vitamin D fortification in milk led to some infant deaths.
Mm.
So that's a big part of this history that they deal with.
Dr. Christensen, I'm so sorry to cut you off. I'm getting the signal that I have to take a break. So
okay.
We have one more segment when we're going to come back. This is an important question that you need answered, and we're going to finish this discussion. So don't go anywhere. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living. We're going to be back right after these words.
Megafood Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet, our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Bridging the gap between nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals. That's the concept behind Zymogen's new exclusive and patented line of formulations, which utilize sophisticated delivery technologies to focus on specific molecular targets. The Zymogen EP line features Immunitix 3-6, a potent ingredient that has demonstrated a measurable ability to prime and enhance immune cell function. Applications include immune system support and support for white blood cell recovery following radiation therapy and other bone marrow-affecting treatments. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
For over 10 years, Nordic Naturals has been the world leader in crafting omega-3 fish oils that are great for the body and for the planet. They work one-on-one with researchers and select fishermen to harvest only those fish species that are flourishing. With Nordic Naturals, you get all the benefits of omega-3, a strong heart, clear eyes, and flexible joints, plus the reassurance that their products are environmentally friendly. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great tasting omega oils.
Did you get enough lutein today to support eye health? Most Americans consume only 2 milligrams per day, yet populations with good eye health often consume 6 to 20 milligrams to protect the macula of the eye against oxidative stress and aging. Vision Optimizer from Gero Formulas supplies lutein, zeaxanthin, and 13 other vitamins, phytonutrients, and herbs that support eye health and function, reduce eye fatigue, and promote eye comfort. For more information, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team includes pharmacists, nutritionists, clinical herbalists, and naturopaths offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by The Village Green. We've been talking with Dr. Steve Christensen about the importance of vitamin D, and in the last segment, we got cut off. We were discussing issues with safety of vitamin D supplementation. So, Dr. Christensen, I'd love for you to launch right into that, right where you left off before the break.
Glad to do it. You know, we talk about the 50 nanograms per mil being the optimal level for a vitamin D level in your serum. Vitamin D toxicity doesn't usually occur until your level exceeds 150 nanograms per mil, so there's a lot of wiggle room there. Toxicity typically won't occur at doses of 10,000 units a day. Most healthy people can tolerate those doses for a long, long time. Toxicity typically won't occur until people are nudging 50,000 units per day for a long period of time. The Institute of Medicine's recommendations are, I think everybody agrees, too low. Doses of, say, 2,000 units a day, particularly during the winter, are more than reasonable. As a matter of fact, they're probably the bottom end of a good dose. Personally, I take 5,000 units a day all year long unless I'm out in the sun. 10 minutes of exposure to the sun with your arms and legs bared will give you 10,000 units of vitamin D. Now, as far as supplementation is concerned, vitamin D3, for better or worse, is more potent than vitamin D2. Despite some vegetarians' claims that vitamin D2 works just as well, science shows us that it does not. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D3 is anywhere from 70% to 400 times more potent than D2. It's more effective at raising your 25-hydroxy-D levels, which we talked about being the standard for measuring vitamin D status. And due to slight differences in the side chain of the D2, its products are less capable of binding to those all-important BDRs. So I think at this stage of the game, we have to acknowledge that vitamin D is incredibly important in human health. The dosages that have been recommended as sufficient for most people are below what they should be taking. 2,000 units a day is probably a place to start and go up from there. 10,000 units a day are reasonable for most people. You won't get into troubles with toxicity at that dosage. For people who are deficient, they may require much higher doses for short periods of time, mm-hmm. but they need to monitor those 25-hydroxy-D levels. And if your doctor tells you you don't need to have it done, frankly, I'd find another doc, because this is an important issue.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the research, I think, will only solidify what we're starting to see and show the importance of vitamin D in regarding overall health. And, you know, I think that is the important thing, is make sure that you're doing some daily supplementation to make sure you're having your levels checked. There is some debate about where the perfect level is, but I think generally what the research is showing us when we look at these large population studies is vitamin D levels somewhere between 45 and 65 seems to confer, you know, a really good amount of preventative health. And the deficiencies of vitamin D sometimes don't lead to the outright symptoms that we see in other deficiencies or other conditions. But understanding that if you have your vitamin D levels optimized over time, you're probably going to be at lower risk for a lot of these conditions that we've talked about. And I think, as we've talked about, Dr. Christensen, the research will only show that as we move on. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on the show today. Do you have any other comments to wrap up? We've just got a few seconds left.
Oh, this has been an absolute pleasure. And as we discussed earlier today, we could spend hours talking about vitamin D. So I just encourage everybody to keep their eye on the news about vitamin D, keep your nose in the wind, and get some sunshine.
Exactly. Well, that was Dr. Steve Christensen with Thorne Research. We thank him for being with us. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. It was a pleasure being with you this Sunday, and I'll look forward to seeing you all soon. Until then, I'm wishing you the best of health. Take care.